This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, November 24th of 2021. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Rosanna Longo-Better is operating the board. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Build Back Better plan originally contained some of the most sweeping immigration legislation in decades. We'll look at where things stand now after the bill went through the House of Representatives. Then we'll hear the latest installment of our regional series on the housing crisis across the Mountain West. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You, and herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. 8:30, an update from the BBC. At the bottom of the hour, commentary from Jim Hightower. And then it's a public affair. Today we'll hear a panel discussion on the roots of today's racial exclusion of Native Americans in Boulder County. The panel took place last month at CU Boulder Law School. At 9:30, Cal Huss will be in the Denver studio to bring you the Morning Sound Alternative and a mix of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Starting today, the city of Denver is joining nearly all jurisdictions in the metro area to require masks be worn in indoor spaces. However, businesses can exempt themselves if they show that they are requiring proof of vaccination from employees and customers against COVID-19. At a news conference, Mayor Michael Hancock said that he is calling it a vax or mask mandate. To receive a mask exemption, a business would have to submit a plan to a health department showing how it would verify that at least 95% of people in their establishments at any time are vaccinated. Denverite reports that almost 90% of the city's residents, 12 and older, have received at least one dose, and 8 out of 10 are fully vaccinated. The head of Denver Health, Robin Wittenstein, said that people are coming into hospitals now sicker than ever before, and in larger numbers than seen before. She added that the system is on the brink of collapse. In Aurora, a group of Republican city council members are asking the city manager to disregard a mask mandate for Adams and Arapahoe counties. The Sentinel reports that the order goes into effect today and requires everyone 2 years or older to wear a face mask covering in indoor spaces. The group said that is resisting the order includes Mayor Michael Kaufman, and they claim that the Tri-County Health Agency doesn't have the authority over the entire city. In other metro areas, Boulder County has had a mask mandate since Friday, September 3rd, that is in effect until the health director amends it. Yesterday, Broomfield ordered that masks are required for everyone over the age of 2 in all city and county facilities. A mask order in Larimer County went into effect in late October and will remain until infection and hospitalization levels are reduced. Douglas County is the only jurisdiction in the metro Denver area that is not implementing a mask order. Those there, over 18, can claim an exemption. However, the schools in Douglas County still require face coverings. Colorado Governor Jared Polis said yesterday he would not be ordering another statewide mask requirement. His statement came at about an hour after a consortium of medical officials from Denver, Boulder, and Jefferson counties said that they are implementing their masking orders in the metro area because of a lack of action by the state and to avoid overwhelming the state's hospital system. At least 10 residents of a motel in Aurora have sued the owner of a facility, claiming that they were illegally evicted last month. KDVR reports that the suit alleges that armed private security guards told the residents of the Summit View Inn on East Colfax to move out immediately without any notice or even time to gather their belongings. Attorneys say that people did not have time to collect passports, other forms of identification, medical prescriptions, or even clothes. The plaintiffs claim that the property owner violated state laws about eviction that require a court order, and only after such order the county sheriff, not private security guards, can enforce the eviction. Workers at HelloFresh, a meal kit delivery firm, have voted not to form a union at its facility in Aurora. Their vote was almost 2-1 against organizing. Colorado Public Radio reports that Kevin Abels, president of the union that helped the workers, said that HelloFresh spent thousands of dollars a day on anti-union consultants and held repeated captive audience meetings while workers were on the clock. A former immigration attorney from Boulder is facing new charges from the district attorney's office. Emily Cohen is already scheduled to be tried on charges that she stole money from clients. Now she has been charged with forging documents and lying about COVID-19 test results. The Daily Camera reports that Cohen was found guilty 7 years ago on 13 counts of theft of more than $40,000 from seven immigrant families because she did not do the work she agreed to perform. That conviction was overturned in 2018, and Cohen is set to go to trial for a second time in about 10 days. When she failed to appear earlier this month at a court hearing, prosecutors say she submitted false documents indicating she had tested positive in order to excuse her absence. Currently, Cohen is in jail in Iowa and is awaiting extradition back to Colorado. Police in Aurora have arrested a teenage suspect in a shooting last week at Nome Park near Aurora Central High School, in which six people were injured. The incident occurred a week ago Monday. The 15-year-old who was arrested yesterday has been charged with attempted first-degree murder. A second shooting in Aurora last week took place at Hinckley High School on Friday, and three teens have been arrested in that matter. The National Weather Service is predicting a 20% chance of snow today afternoon. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with highs around 45. For Thanksgiving Day, it will be sunny with the highs in the low 50s. Right now, it's about 43 in Boulder and 39 in Denver and Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Build Back Better bill passed the House last week and is currently before the Senate. Some compare the sweeping legislation to the New Deal, a packet of government spending measures that helped the U.S. economy recover from the Great Depression. The Build Back Better legislation originally included what would have been the most significant immigration reform in decades, but those provisions have been watered down. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Jennifer Piper, Immigration Program Director of the Denver Office of the American Friends Service Committee, about what immigration measures remain in the bill.
The bill currently includes something called parole, and that's what just passed the House of Representatives and is on the way to the Senate. Parole is a temporary status. You can apply for a work permit under it. It would last 5 years and be renewable one time only. This measure essentially kicks the question of citizenship about 10 years down the road to a future Congress if it passes as currently written. That temporary status is not available to everyone who's undocumented in the United States. It has a bunch of different provisions that are exclusionary, including misdemeanors, previous immigration contact, and any accusation that you might be a threat to national security. And the way that this got watered down is, first of all, that I want to back up a second and say it is amazing that it was included in the bill at all. In February, Congress told us that it was impossible to include an immigration measure. And thanks to all of the work of our directly impacted members and others like them across the country, this became a priority. The way that it changed from citizenship to parole is mainly due to pressure from moderate Democrats in the House not wanting to include a full path to citizenship in the measure. So that's really disappointing because most of the Democratic Party ran on a pathway to citizenship, campaigned on getting rid of Trump, Obama, and Bush exclusions in immigration code, and then not even a year later have now backed off to this stance of parole. We are hopeful that the Senate will consider including citizenship. They can still do that. And we are now focusing again on Senator Hickenlooper and Senator Bennett, really calling on them to use all of their political capital for a pathway to citizenship. And that will to use the capital they have is the only barrier between full citizenship and inclusion in U.S. society for immigrants.
Jennifer, how many people will be affected by this compromise on a pathway to citizenship?
It's not clear yet exactly how many people will be approved because of the exclusions I mentioned earlier. The provision, to give you a frame of reference, is more restrictive than the DACA program. So less percentage of folks in the U.S. who are undocumented will be able to access that. There's estimates anywhere from 3 million to 7 million people might be eligible.
The House bill currently includes immigration parole, which will allow many undocumented people temporary renewal, access to a work permit, and relief from deportation for up to 10 years, but no opportunity for permanent status. Why is it so difficult to get a more definitive pathway to citizenship?
That is a great question, because when we look at polling from people across the political spectrum, from Republicans, Independents, Democrats, regardless of party, at least 56% of voters in the U.S. support the Senate including a pathway to citizenship, even if it means that they need to ignore the advice of someone called the parliamentarian. There's an overwhelming support across the country for these measures. What's lacking is just the political will to get it done. And we're so close to tipping the balance on that political will in this moment. If people have any interest in helping to get citizenship across the finish line, these next 3 weeks are really critical. This is a once in a generation opportunity. In the almost two decades I've been doing this work, we've never been so close to a pathway to citizenship for some. And we really need for folks to join with us and ask Senator Hickenlooper and Senator Bennett to speak to Senator Schumer and leadership about how important this is to Colorado.
As a grassroots organizer, you are in contact with many people who would be directly affected by changes to immigration policy. What has been their reaction to the changes made to the bill?
Folks really expressed disappointment and frustration. Parole is a temporary relief for some, and we appreciate that. But parole is not what the Democrats promised. And that has been the overwhelming reaction from our membership who are directly impacted, who live in mixed status families. This is not what you promised us. And you have the power and the majorities to make it happen.
In other words, it's like, if it's not now, when?
And if it's not you, then who? When we pass these kinds of temporary fixes, we're really robbing people of the permanency they need to be able to fully participate in the lives of their families and our communities. So if it's not this Congress, if it's not this president, if it's not this moment, then when? Most of our membership, like me, have been doing this for at least a decade, if not more. And we know that this opportunity is a rare one.
Is the House bill as it stands now at risk of further dilution by people opposed to immigration reforms?
Yes. So we are worried about a series of amendments. There'll be the bill will come to the floor in the Senate, and then it will be opened to amendment. And we know that a small group of Republican senators will try to bring a raft of anti-immigrant amendments, as well as try to remove even this parole or hopefully a path to citizenship from the bill. In that moment, it is vulnerable to a couple of Democrats maybe joining with Republicans, and that the margin in the Senate is so slim. It's 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans. So we really need for our senators to be speaking with the rest of their caucus and garnering support and readiness for those amendments, so that when this bill is finally passed out of the Senate, it includes measures that recognize both the cultural and economic contributions of immigrants in our community, 75% of whom are defined as essential workers and have really shown up for us over the last 2 years at great risk to themselves.
I have been speaking with Jennifer Piper of the Denver office of the American Friends Service Committee. Thank you so much. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
As cost of living skyrockets, it's become increasingly difficult to keep a hold on stable housing. So how does the only shelter in Montezuma County, Colorado, for people experiencing homelessness fit into the complicated housing crisis? KSJD's Sophia Stewart-Rossi reports.
It's a fall, chilly Friday night in Cortez, Colorado, and the bridge shelter has just opened up at 6 in the evening.
Get something to eat, okay?
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you.
The bridge shelter is the only facility within 40 miles that offers sheltering for people experiencing homelessness. And they're a, quote, seasonal shelter, which means they're only open during mid-October till the end of April. The facility can hold up to 41 individuals during the night. Benjamin Harris is the executive director of The Bridge.
It was started many years ago by a brave group of volunteers who were tired of seeing people freeze to death in the wintertime in the park. And they started in the jail.
After moving through various locations, The Bridge has called a 2019-built facility home. As people are checking in for the night, you can see their relief that they'll have a warm bed to sleep on tonight and a homemade meal for dinner and breakfast when they wake up.
Well, people have to survive. That's what we're here for.
But there are limitations to what the Bridge Shelter can do to help people survive in a crisis. According to Harris, low funding causes the shelter to have very limited open hours. For instance, after checking in for the night, people have to check out by 8 the following morning. And the Bridge Shelter cannot bring in families into their facility because they accept sexual assault offenders, leaving some families stranded in their cars, on the streets, or in encampments. Justin Norton moved to Cortez 6 years ago with his wife and kids. They rented a home in a duplex, and Norton says they always paid their rent, even if it sometimes was a bit late. And then one day, Norton says, the landlord just didn't want to work with his family anymore and evicted them.
And I just went into this deepest, darkest pit of despair.
Norton's family was living out of their car or hotels, and Norton says social services were threatening to take his kids away from him because they didn't have stable housing. In fact, Norton's family was split apart as the threats became reality and his kids were removed by authorities. And it shattered him and his wife where all hope was lost. Kelly Willis, the executive director of the Pinion Project here in Montezuma County, says these family situations have been increasing over the last couple of years.
Pinion has done emergency assistance for many years, but the last 2 or 3 years I have been like over my head in housing issues.
The Pinion Project is a nonprofit organization that provides services to thousands of families and children in Southwest Colorado. And in the past, they could provide affordable housing to families experiencing homelessness. But now there just aren't enough houses that are available to be rented in the first place, affordable or not.
We literally have no options for families right now. And it's really hard to tell them that. Mm-hmm. And for individuals throughout our community, and you can see the signs of homelessness that we didn't have previously.
Willis says the Bridge Shelter is helping folks that are in crisis and need a place to land for a night out of the cold weather. But really helping individuals and families experiencing homelessness due to the housing crisis has to include effective and supportive services like case management. Services Norton and his wife needed in order to help them get out of homelessness and get their kids back.
It's so big that it doesn't matter how hard you try, you ain't getting out of it unless somebody's there willing to help you.
As the number of people experiencing homelessness is increasing due to the housing crisis, the Bridge Shelter will continue to provide warm beds, food, and showers for people who are in crisis during their very limited open hours. And with more funding to the shelter, more can be done, like being open all year round. Benjamin Harris, the executive director of the Bridge Shelter, says,
there's a lot of hurt going on out there.
And having compassion and respect for people experiencing homelessness is a step forward in the complicated and long-awaited solution to the housing crisis here in Montezuma County. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio in Cortez, Colorado, I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi.
This story is part of a Rocky Mountain Community Radio reporting collaboration on affordable housing funded by the Solutions Journalism Network. We now go to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress.
Currently, the United States ranks last among high-income countries for maternal health outcomes. While pregnancy-related mortality rates are dropping around the world, they are rising in our country. There are stark racial and ethnic disparities as well. Maternal mortality rates for Black and Native Americans are 2 to 4 times higher than rates for White Americans, and research has shown that maternal mortality and morbidity rates are elevated for Hispanic and Asian people and Pacific Islander people. The legislation includes comprehensive investments from the Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act, including funding to address social detriments of maternal health, investments to grow and diversify the perinatal workforce, and resources specifically for community-based organizations and maternal mental health equity grant programs. The Momnibus Act also includes an evidence-based mandatory provision that will make federal funds permanently available for states to spend on expanded postpartum Medicaid coverage to 1 year in every state. The Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act will also invest in social determinants of health that influence maternal health, such as housing, transportation, and nutrition, funds community-based organizations to improve maternal health and equity, studies maternal health risks for pregnant and postpartum veterans, diversifies and grows the perinatal workforce so moms can receive culturally congruent help, collects data to understand the causes of the maternal health crisis here, helps moms with maternal health challenges and substance abuse disorders, improves maternal health care and support for incarcerated moms. The Medicaid and CHIP Payment and Access Commission must also report on the impact of a Medicaid ineligibility for pregnant and postpartum prisoners. Additionally, as a condition for certain grants, states and territories must have laws limiting the use of restraints on pregnant individuals in prisons. Increase to telehealth and improving maternal health in undeserved areas is also included, as well as creating payment models for incentivizing high-quality maternity care, addressing the unique risks of COVID-19 during and after pregnancy, funding community-based initiatives to reduce exposure to climate change-related risks, promoting maternal vaccinations, offering expanded child care and universal pre-K, all making it easier for Americans to make progress on getting back to work. The Department of Health and Human Services and other specified departments must address the social determinants of maternal health, which include child care, housing, food security, transportation, and environmental conditions. The bill also extends to 24 months postpartum eligibility for special supplemental nutrition programs for women, infants, and children. If you have thoughts on the Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act, you can contact your representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars with some ideas on how you can prevent yourself from overeating during the holidays. Well, of course, we know it's a good idea to not go grocery shopping when we're hungry, but also you might want to eat some healthy things before you attend a party or a soiree. And most holiday tables will have some crudité or raw vegetables, so make sure you give yourself a generous supply of those cherry tomatoes and broccoli florets and carrot and celery sticks. As a matter of fact, celery is very alkalinizing, so if you do find you've eaten too much, eating a few stalks of celery can help calm some of that digestive fire. Also easily available are some herbal teas, peppermint tea, ginger tea, fennel or anise, caraway. There's so many. You can even use some of the spices on your spice shelf and make a tea using a heaping teaspoon of herb per cup of water. I am a big believer in the time-tested remedy of apple cider vinegar and honey. 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar and 1 teaspoon of honey in 1 cup of hot water is going to be alkalinizing, high in vitamin C, diuretic, and antimicrobial. Sometimes I think we just need to psych ourselves up and say, just say no, or have a limit on what the special treat might be. You know, like, okay, I can have 1 Mexican wedding cookie, but not 10. And this is only after you've had a lot of healthy fare as well. I also love this Japanese remedy called umeboshi plum paste. It's spelled U-M-E-B-O-S-H-I, umeboshi plum paste. It's technically an apricot, but they call it a plum. And it's a fermented food, and it's said to be queen of the alkalinizing foods. You simply put a teaspoon of the umeboshi plum paste in a cup of hot water and sip it slowly, and by the time you're done, your belly's going to feel better. Also, some probiotics can help. Now, this might sound a little corny, but you know what? I think if we did more handcrafts, we wouldn't overeat so much. So you might see me at a holiday party with my knitting or my crochet. If I am going to have a drink, I might have some cranberry juice with some sparkling water. There's a lot of ways we can have a good time without having a bad time later, because we really made ourselves more toxic. What fun is that? So hope you have a wonderful holiday season, and there will be more wonderful ideas for you. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Rosanna Longo-Better, Sophia Stewart-Razi, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Rosanna Longo-Better has been operating the board. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, then a public affair. But first, these are the news headlines from the BBC.